case in our calendar is 99-411, Janice Taylor versus City of London, Ohio. Ms. Tangen.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Jill Tangen, and my co-counsel, Robert Albright, and I are here on behalf of the appellant to the case. I need to start this case by stating what should be obvious, but in the context of this case, it seems very important. The right of referendum is still one of the most important constitutional protections given to persons living in a municipality. We'd like to believe that the concerns of the voters and the concerns of the city legislators are the same, but they are not always, especially when we're talking about issues of annexation. City council members often see the tax revenues that city expansion provides, and those living in the municipality, however, often fear that expansion will result in increased traffic, industrial development, and overcrowding. Thus far, Article 2, Section 1F of the Ohio Constitution has given citizens the ability to vote on whether city expansion is desirable. But the decisions of the lower courts in this case threaten to destroy that right of referendum. As you are already aware, the facts in this case are not in dispute. The City of London accepted two annexation petitions by ordinance. When referendum petitions were filed by the appellants in this case, so that the annexations could go on the ballot at the next general election, the City of London repealed the original ordinances accepting the annexation petition and then reapproved the two annexation petitions by adopting two emergency ordinances. The appellants in this case are city residents of the City of London, and they are opposed to the expansion of the municipality.
And no subsequent referendum petitions were circulated vis-a-vis the second set of ordinances.
No, Your Honor, and it's our opinion that because they passed it by emergency ordinance, the emergency ordinance precludes the referendum, and therefore we could have circulated petitions to the Board of Elections, not as such a referendum on the ballot.
No, because then it requires an initiative.
Exactly.
Okay, but that wasn't done.
No, because in this particular case, it was our opinion that the City of London took action that they were precluded from taking pursuant to Ohio statute, and that they passed the ordinance by emergency legislation, and therefore we felt that this was the most appropriate method to challenge action taken.
And what's your best case on that issue, that a legislative body can't, by an emergency ordinance, enact legislation, that is, these ordinances, accepting the annexation?
There have been no Supreme Court rulings on this issue thus far. There are two lower court decisions, which of course are not binding in this case, but I do find that they are persuasive. Those cases are detailed in our brief. That Somali versus Brinkman, which is a Medina County Common Police Court case, and the Village of Navarre versus City of Massillon. And in both those cases, the courts noted that there is a conflict between statute, Ohio Revised Code Section 709.10 and Ohio Revised Code Section 731.30. Section 709.10 governs the effective date of the annexation, and it specifically provides that the annexations either become effective 30 days after the passage of the municipal ordinance or 30 days after an affirmative vote by the electorate in a referendum. In contrast, Section 731.30 governs the effective date of emergency legislation, and in 731.30 it provides that emergency legislation becomes effective immediately.
Is the City of London a chartered municipality?
Yes, we know.
So would 701 be effective with regard to a charter municipality, or doesn't the municipality have a right to follow its own charter with regard to what is an emergency? For instance, our charter in Toledo always said we could not pass give a franchise like to an Edison company or somebody like that, a gas company, by emergency, because it had to be subject to the referendum. But other things, like zoning, could in fact, an annexation could be passed as emergency measures. Why, what restriction is there on this municipality that it can't operate under its own charter?
It's not a matter of its own charter, and I can't speak specifically to what the city's charters provide, but in matters of annexation, the home rule powers don't govern statutory requirements must be followed in procedures of annexation. So therefore, the statutes in this case do govern. Section 70910 does provide a procedure for annexation to the City of London.
Okay, and let's stay with that. 70910, what language specifically in point 10 prohibits them from doing what they did?
It specifically states that an annexation shall become effective 30 days after the passage of the resolution ordinance by the legislative authority of the municipal corporation accepting the annexation.
Uh-huh.
If it has to be 30 days after its effective date, that it, after the passage of the ordinance, it becomes effective 30 days later, it can't, by plain language, become effective immediately. I understand that you're looking for, it says, can't pass it by emergency ordinance, but I think you have to read the statute and look at the fact that Section 70130 specifically says an emergency legislation becomes effective immediately. Annexation legislation becomes effective 30 days later. There's clearly a conflict here, and in order to resolve that conflict, as I mentioned, the two lower courts stated that Section 709.10 is a specific statute. It is intended to address annexation matters specifically. And the language, moreover, in Section 709.10 was amended in the 1960s to add that effective date. Originally, the statute 709.10 provided that the annexation became effective upon passage of the ordinance approving the annexation petition. The problem with that, of course, is that you have an annexation and then you have a referendum that is defeated, and therefore you have to undo the annexation. The legislature clearly wanted annexations to be subject to referendum. So rather than allowing it, us to go through this process of, I guess, de-annexation, they added the language that says annexation becomes effective 30 days later.
But
and we're not allowed for the referendum time.
We must read statutes to reconcile them if we can and not treat them as contradictory. There's an argument here that one's specific and one's general as between point 10 and point 30. And the other argument, as you know, posed by your adversary, is that the 30-day effective date is for just that it affects when the boundary changes, and that the emergency legislation doesn't conflict with that. That's the effective date of the legislation, and yet the boundary change still doesn't take effect for 30 days and still would permit a referendum to be filed in that 30-day period, and here it was filed 38 days later. Does that sound right?
I understand what your question is, and I think it's a point that the appellees have raised in their brief,
right,
which is that if the legislation becomes effective at one point, the boundary change becomes effective at another.
And that one could still challenge, I guess, and thereby, you have this 30 days, even though it was an emergency, the legislation that affected annexation was emergency and therefore effective immediately. Prior to the boundary change, one could file a referendum.
There's substantial, generally when there's an emergency legislation, that precludes the right of referendum. That's often the reason that cities pass emergency legislation is to preclude the right of referendum. In fact, this court has recognized in several cases that cities may do that, that it may want to circumvent the right to referendum, they may pass it by emergency legislation. And appellants aren't contesting that point. We are saying that in the case of annexation, because of the specific language of 709.10, annexation cannot be passed by emergency ordinance. I think the distinction that the appellees have tried to make between the effective date of the legislation versus the effective date of the change in territorial boundaries is really a distinction without a difference. The reason to allow for the annexation, for that 30-day period for the annexation to take effect is to allow for it to be subject to referendum.
Okay.
If it's passed by emergency ordinance, we don't have those 30 days.
And given that, this idea that referendum rights are cut off by virtue of emergency legislation, if we were to accept your position, the position put forth by your client, would we not be precluding emergency legislation with regard to any action, any legislative action?
I think the point that you're raising is strictly with respect to annexation, because we have a specific statute that sets the effective date. Now, there have been some other cases where this issue has come forward, and specifically I'm thinking of the Fosterian case, where there is a constitutional provision that says that if a city tried to acquire a public utility, that ordinance doesn't become effective for 30 days. The court in that case never reached the decision about whether or not you could acquire a public utility by emergency ordinance because of some other procedural issues in that matter. So that we've not ever had an opportunity to look at this issue in another light. But the appellants in this case are proposing that it is strictly limited to those cases where there is specific language that says that we're going to delay the effective date of an annexation of any kind of legislation because of the right of referendum. I think that's clearly the case of the constitutional provision relating to public utilities, and it's clearly the case as well with respect to 709.10. Annexations are such a critical part of the makeup of the municipality. It's not just a matter of territorial boundaries. It's a matter of traffic and overcrowding in schools, industrial development, quality and quantity of utilities. And it is such an important part of the city makeup that the legislature recognized that it is necessary to preserve the right of referendum. And the City of London circumvented that right in this case and never gave its people an opportunity to express its opinion about whether or not it was appropriate and desirable to allow the boundaries to grow.
Council, would you please address the argument you made about not interested parties and therefore no ability to have a discussion tonight?
Sure.
I'm a little hard time following how you're not interested parties, so I
the interested parties, just for background information, this was an issue that was raised strictly in the Court of Appeal, that the appellants in this matter failed to seek an injunction pursuant to 709.07. The appellants couldn't have pursued an injunction pursuant to this code section. The requirements in this code section are threefold. One is that you were required to be interested persons. This court has made several distinctions that in matters of annexations before the county commissioners, at that level of the annexation proceeding, there are only certain parties that really have standing to complain about the decision of the board of county commissioners. Specifically, if you look at the cases Middleton versus McGee and In Re Petition to annex 320 acres to South Lebanon, the court said that we've got a, when you are persons living in the territory to be annexed, you are clearly interested persons and you have a right to file for an injunction, you have a right to complain about the decisions of the Board of County Commissioners. But when you are trustees of the territory that the land is being annexed from, when you are persons living in the municipality to where the land is being annexed to, you have a limited right to question the decision of the Board of County Commissioners. And the reason for that is because we already have a statutory method for those people to challenge the annexation procedure, and that's by right of referendum after the municipality has approved the annexation.
Doesn't that create a dichotomy then between certain parties that have to act timely and other parties that don't have to act timely? It seems to be an inequity there.
I don't think so. I think in the section 709.07, it's meant to address specific limited circumstances. And more important than the interested person, it requires that there be some error in the proceedings before the Board of County Commissioners. And that is the reason for the injunction. This court has already recognized in the Board of Trustees versus Davis, that where there is no error before the Board of County Commissioners, then parties may use a 2506 appeal to the Court of Appeals. So the 709.07 is a very limited circumstance that is supposed to be used in, regardless of interested persons or not. So it really does create that kind of an inequity.
Your clients don't live in the affected area. They simply don't want to see London grow, as that we said earlier, when it started, so they're exposed to expansion of municipality.
That's correct.
And so they have a different remedy than 70907. Is that your argument?
They, 70907, they're precluded from using that,
right.
Mostly because there was no error, before the, at least to our knowledge, before the Board of County Commissioners. Their ability to challenge that is through their right of referendum after the city approves it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hageman. Mr. Andrew.
Thank you, Chief Justice Boyer. May it please the court, Ms. Hageman, Mr. Albright. If I might, very briefly, there are two facts here that I think it's important for this court to understand and be aware of, because it relates directly to the issue of mootness. And that is that for a year and a half, this property, these 800 acres that were annexed to the City of London, have been a part of the City of London. The inhabitants of those 800 acres have voted in municipal elections. They have transferred property within the City of London. They have paid city income taxes. They have paid city property taxes. And indeed, as I speak today, there's a 208,000 square foot building going in on this territory in the City of London. And if this case were to go back to a referendum as the next general election, in November of 2000, it would be 2.5 years that this property has been within the City of London, and the inhabitants have been a part of that city and citizens thereof. They would therefore have been disenfranchised after having spent 2.5 years within the City limits of London. I think that simply illustrates why this court, beginning in 1910, and on several occasions up through 1982, has repeated.
But arguably, counsel, that's exactly one could predict that argument be made, and therefore referendum rights could be foreclosed all the time. You know, just if emergency legislation was wrong, you know, it would seem that the argument still is that these citizens will be, but these other citizens were arguably foreclosed from their rights.
I think that answers one of the good questions here, and that is, were these citizens foreclosed from seeking relief before 38 days, Justice Cook, as you indicated, before 38 days after the emergency legislation was passed and filing the referendum petitions? In fact, under revised code 709.07, the General Assembly specifically set forth a procedure whereby parties who are interested, the persons who are interested, they challenge the decision of the county commissioners in seeking an injunction against annexation. They have 60 days after the approval of the annexation by the county commissioners. Now, the argument has been made both in this court, in the Court of Appeals, and the County Police Court, that these two residents of London could not satisfy the provisions of 709.07. Well, we do not have a record before this court as to whether they could or they could not have. But if we look at the simple language of the statute, any person who appeared in person or by attorney in the hearing, that is the county commissioner's hearing, has standing. We don't know whether these people attended that hearing or not. I suppose Mr. Albright can tell us, because he represented a number of people that crowded into that hearing. Furthermore, the court of Middletown, a case in which, the case that Ms. Hageman mentioned, in Middletown, this court held that the city of Middletown was a person interested and did have standing to seek an injunction. Middletown was an annexing municipality. Frankly, on this record, who is to say that these two residents of the City of London would not have been persons interested in order to bring an injunctive action? Moreover, I would like to point out...
For our purposes, that's... I think we'd have to look at that to say, in the big picture, the General Assembly and the statutory scheme enacted gives this road of relief for interested persons. Should that foreclose those who don't qualify, whether these folks qualify or not? I mean, should we look at the bigger problem of those who don't fit the definition of interested persons, and what remedies ought to be, what scheme is in place for them? Does emergency legislation cut that off?
Well,
an emergency ordinance?
Emergency ordinance is kind of on every single day.
So it's, so then the question becomes, if is emergency, an emergency ordinance permitted to cut off in light of the fact that interested persons will not be foreclosed? And we don't, maybe this General Assembly didn't care if those who didn't qualify as interested have their rights.
I think you put your finger on it, Justice Scalia. I think the General Assembly, looking at annexations, and in light of the fact that emergency ordinances and the legislation permitting emergency ordinances has been on the books for 40, 50 years at least anyway.
And doesn't have an exception.
It doesn't have an exception, and the General Assembly, looking at annexations, chose not to specifically state, or even impliedly state, that persons may bring a referendum petition or circulate referendum petitions on an annexation, whether it's passed by emergency ordinance or not. The General Assembly had the absolute right, clearly, to specifically state in 709.10 or some other section of the annexation statutes that emergency ordinances cannot be used to accept an annexation petition. And the General Assembly rejected it. It provided a comprehensive scheme and the ability to go on injunction. And that was all the General Assembly provided.
You seem to argue and somewhat argue here today that if though these parties read the definition of interested person and read the statute 709.07 and said, that doesn't fit us, that they should have somehow nevertheless opted to seek relief through that statute?
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor. I mean, when you're weighing the 860 acres that are going to become a part of the City of London and participate in the City of London's life as citizens of that city and rely upon the ordinances and whatnot, that in the City of London, you weigh that against people that have sat on it, that just decided for whatever reason that maybe they didn't fit the definition.
Well, let's say they really didn't. I mean, the implication is, well, they did. You seem to be implying, well, they did fit it. But let's say they don't. Then you're not making that argument that even if they didn't, they should have nevertheless filed.
Well, clearly, if they don't fit 709.07, then obviously they shouldn't. There was no reason to go ahead and seek that injunction. But the fact is, the General Assembly has determined, by reason of the statutes that have passed in the annexation area, that if you don't fit that definition, then, and an emergency ordinance is passed, you do not have
you're foreclosed.
A remedy. Mm-hmm. And again, I would like to, since we have turned into the question of whether 709.10 actually requires or prohibits, an emergency ordinance except in annexation, I believe it was Justice Cook that put her finger on it directly. There is no irreconcilable, there's no conflict in the first place between 709.10 and 731.30 insofar as 709.10 does not require, does not prohibit, an annexation ordinance from being passed by emergency. 709.10 simply states the annexation becomes effective 30 days after the ordinance is passed. Within that 30 days, it's important to remember, the annexation petition and the map is passed to the county auditor, the city auditor, the city treasurer, and the secretary of state. That 30-day period allows the political boundaries, the time for the political boundaries to be changed. Tax parcels will be changed, tax numbers will be assigned, various records will be changed. That 30 days is an important 30-day administrative period to allow the annexation to become effective within 30 days. It's not a meaningless 30-day period, and certainly by implication, one cannot assume from that 30-day period that that was intended to foreclose an emergency ordinance from being passed to effectuate the annexation. There is no conflict between those two statutes, and furthermore, there is no irreconcilable conflict between those two statutes.
If you can do emergency legislation, why
Yeah, nice little drive back.
Your Honor, my answer to that is, it's not every day. Municipalities pass emergency ordinances to avoid petitions being circulated every day. It's a part of municipal law, the state of Ohio. Legislatures get out of control in passing emergency legislation, as this court has previously stated, the remedy is at the ballot box. If new representatives are passing emergency legislation improperly, then the remedy is at the ballot box. And that's what you're I would simply like to state that there is no conflict between the two statutes that are at issue here. The plaintiffs had a remedy in this case, or at least had an opportunity to seek a remedy. They chose not to do so. We would ask the court to affirm the Court of Appeals, which had affirmed the trial court in dismissing the
just before you sit down, I just have one question of interest. How could you tax people in this 800 acres? Why'd they have to pay city tax if they didn't live or work in the city?
Well, there are people that live and work in the city, and
if you work in the city, you're going to get taxed no matter where you live. If you live in the city, you're going to get taxed.
Correct.
But you said all these people that have been taxed, paying city taxes,
because
in this 800 acres.
They work in the annexation territory that has been a part of the city for a year and a half.
Oh, now?
Now. For a year and a half, they pay city income tax.
Okay, I thought you started out your argument by saying this was such an integral part of London, they've been paying our taxes,
All right. I'm sorry if I left you with any questions. It's only this, the annexation territory.
Thank you, Mr. Edward.
The Ohio Legislature clearly did not want annexation passed by emergency ordinance. They stated so. They went back in the 1960s and changed the language on 709.10 to say that annexations do not become effective until 30 days after. Emergency legislation, in contrast, becomes effective immediately. It is clear from the plain language of these two statutes that there is a conflict, and therefore the conflict needs to be resolved in favor of the voters in this case. We need to preserve the right of referendum. The City of London may have acted like the land in question here has been part of their territory. These are facts that are not in evidence, first and foremost. But the City of London could have avoided all this uncertainty by giving its voters the opportunity to speak on municipal expansion, and they did not. My clients in this case were not interested persons, they were not owners of the territory in question, and they are not township trustees. Therefore, they were precluded from using Section 70907. Based on these facts, we respectfully request that the court preserve the people's rights to referendum by reversing the decision of the Court of Appeals and the Common Pleas Court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Case is submitted, you'll be advised of our opinion.